Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy Easter Sunday. Monday, if that's when you are listening to and watching us. Steven Yeager won in Houston on Sunday, and that's what we're celebrating. We will get to that. But to me, Rex, the biggest stories of this Sunday were Scottie Scheffler and Alejandro Toste. Scottie Scheffler, if you guys missed it for some reason, had a five-footer on the last hole that would have put him in a playoff against Steven Yeager. Miss Lowe said afterward that he was disappointed, but that he misread the putt. In any case, Scottie Scheffler finished one shot shy in his bid to win three PGA Tour events in a row, a feat that had not been accomplished since Dustin Johnson in 2017. Rex, what's your read on Scottie's Sunday, as well as his entire week in H-Town?
Do we think, is that really it? That the 72nd hole is what cost him that title? Because, I mean, that's being a total.
If we're going to distill the entire tournament,
no.
One short capsule, it would be Scottie Scheffler's 5 foot miss that would have forced a playoff.
Oh, I completely disagree. It was whatever happened on 15 on Saturday when it spun back off the green and left him shocked, and then he ends up making a double bogey there on the par three, and then whatever happened on the 18th hole on Friday he three putts from 5.5 feet, whatever the case may be, and ends up making a six on a par four. I think those two things factor into it, and this goes to, like, I was sitting waiting for you to send out the StreamYard link, and I was thinking to myself that we have talked about this for the last couple of weeks, the idea that I find Scottie Scheffler's game entertaining because of its brilliance. Because, I mean, if you're not entertained by it, you're probably not a huge fan of golf, I would counter. However, what we saw this weekend was his normal brilliance. You look at his stats, and he's right up at the top of the field, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained off the green, strokes gained approach, all the things he does well. But he threw in, I mean, for lack of a better term, a little bit of Jordan Spieth, where he would just have those moments this week that I'm just not used to seeing out of Scottie Scheffler, where he just makes these lapses that you don't anticipate him doing, especially when he's in contention. If you think about just those two holes that I mentioned, that's essentially four strokes right there. He wins by three strokes if he just pars those two holes. And we can sit here and play the what-if game probably with everybody in the field. But when it comes to Scottie Scheffler, that was a level of, and I went back and read his transcript tonight because I was curious to see what the mood was going to be like. And I think he wasn't hung up on the 72nd hole. From what he said in the transcript, it was, look, I hit what I thought was the line. It was just a misread. It happens. And, you know, I felt like I hit a good putt. It wasn't a push. It wasn't a pull. I think as a professional, you can walk away and have some sort of solace in that. The part that gets me is now all of a sudden he's going to throw out a Jordan Spieth hole every once in a while. Like, that to me is interesting.
It was definitely a weird week. You know, not just the three putt from 6 feet on Friday that ended his streak of under par rounds in the PGA Tour. As you mentioned, he had the double on 15 on Saturday when he ripped it off the front edge. Like, how did that possibly happen type thing? He had a horrible miss again on 15 on Sunday with just a wedge. I mean, he's missing 75 feet. What's that? 25 yards?
Yeah.
Right of his target with a wedge. Like, you never see Scottie Scheffler do that. And then he failed to get up and down. Just a couple of really strange shots and uncharacteristic misses, just a little bit untidy, and a couple course management mistakes, missing short sided that you just don't expect to see Scottie Scheffler make. And so my takeaway from Scottie's week wasn't necessarily the miss in the 72nd hole. It wasn't necessarily the putt on Friday. It wasn't the wedge on Saturday. To me, this was Scottie Scheffler's probably a C game, maybe his B minus game. And yet he still could have, should have, would have won the Houston Open for three in a row and heading into the Masters with a head full of steam. You look at the stats. I mean, he was 13th off the tee. He was 6 in approach. He was 15 of 24 chances, which scrambling, which is not exactly Scottie Scheffler-esque. And he was one of the last in the field in putting on Sunday. And yet he still could have, should have, would have won the golf tournament. That to me is my biggest takeaway, Rex. I'm not worried at all as it comes to Scottie Scheffler. He's still installed as a 9-2 favorite for the Masters in 2 weeks' time. I think Rory's next at 12-1. But my question to you, do you think it's actually made Scottie's task easier at Augusta that he didn't win, that he isn't trying to go for, I guess, would have been his fourth in a row at the Masters, knowing he is the prohibitive favorite? I think, the sake of argument, I think he is the prohibitive favorite anyway, but now it's not, you know, Scotty mania as it was DJ-esque in 2017 before the slip in the rental house.
Oh, I don't think it's any different than what we talked about last week. I think your line was the idea that there's the Scotty Scheffler category going into this Masters, and then there's probably the next tier down. Sorry, Schlebel, for stealing your tiers. But, I mean, he's in his own tier, and I would still agree with that. If it was anybody other than Scotty Scheffler that you asked me about, is it better maybe if you do finish runner-up in Houston and have a week's rest and you show up at Augusta rested? I'd probably say yes, but not with Scotty, simply because he doesn't seem to get very, very low or very high. He always seems to sort of maintain this amazing level of calmness, at least on the outside. I'm sure there's a lot of things going on the inside, but I've never seen him. I think Nimbrando was talking about this on the telecast this afternoon about there was some frustration earlier in the week, either with his putting or his ball striking or whatever the case may be. He could sense he did not have, to your point, his A game, and still he puts himself right into it. And reading his comments before he left Houston, I felt like he was probably happy just to have given himself a couple of opportunities. And I don't even know if it would have made a difference had he won this week. He would have celebrated the same way he always does. Has a hamburger with his family on Sunday night and goes home and has coffee with his wife tomorrow morning. And that's what he does. I mean, that's the celebration. And I think that's the beauty of Scotty Scheffler. I think it gives him something to work on, because I think Randy Smith, his swing coach's line last week, was the idea that, no, there's nothing to do. And I can see Randy saying it. Like, I don't have anything I can tell him.
He's literally just maintaining. Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, it probably, if nothing else, allows him to maybe focus a little bit harder than he would have otherwise. If he was coming off his third consecutive win, it's probably hard to go back to the grind when you've won three straight tournaments. But I don't even know if Scotty needs that.
I mean, for our purposes, I think it adds a little bit of intrigue. I'm already looking forward to Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon whenever Scotty Scheffler meets with the media, because he is undoubtedly going to be asked once again about his putting, and perhaps the idea that this new putter wasn't some salve for his game, and that it's really just a band-aid. Like he may have said it was a misread on the 72nd hole. It does not take you and I. We are not Phil Kenyon, and you can look at that stroke and say that was short and quick, and that is why it missed left. He is going to be asked again. This is a more general sports media reporters who are going to be in attendance for the Masters than have been the golf specific.
Not the savvy folks. Golf media. Is that what you're saying? Not like, savvy. Like, you and I. It's going to be
like you and I. Like I anticipate 5 to 10 questions, Scotty, in regards to his putting, and I don't think had he won this golf tournament, I think 5 to 10. He's going to get what, 30? I think the questions would have been much different. I think it would have been historical comparisons to Tiger, historical comparisons to the best runs we've seen in the past 5, 10, 15 years, whether it was Rory, whether it was DJ, whether it was Spieth back in 2015 and 2017. Like, that's the sort of heater that Scotty Scheffler is on. I think now there's at least a semblance of intrigue. I'm not buying it, but I think I think Scotty's presser just got more interesting on Tuesday. I'll put it that way.
Maybe, and maybe a little bit more contentious, because we know how much he loves to talk about his putting. But you said, bottom half of the field, he finished 37th in strokes gained putting. That's pretty much right in the middle of the field that made the cut. And you also look in round one, he picked up more than 2.5 strokes on the field. In round three, he picked up over 2 strokes on the field. Now, the other two rounds, he gave away strokes, which is kind of a weird scenario where you're having solid rounds bookended by not so solid rounds. And I think that probably speaks to the inconsistency that he should probably be asked about. But the fact of the matter is, go back to Sunday at Bay Hill. Like, he was really, really good on those greens. He picked up 4.5 strokes on the green, on the field. Strokes gained putting and 1 by 5. You don't have to be a genius.
I mean, Friday's stats are obviously skewed by the 3-putt from 6 feet.
The 3-putt on the last hole. Yeah.
Especially 1.5 feet.
Again, I'm not trying to be Brody here. I think it's kind of relative that, yes, that probably took a hit, but he was still losing strokes to the field long before he got to 18 and 3-putted from 5.5 feet. Before we get to Alejandro Tosti, because I did find him to be, I talk about entertaining golf. He was wildly entertaining golf. You and I traded a text, and you hate it when I digress like this, but I want to pull back the curtain a little bit. You and I traded a text about Scotty's answer to his question from our colleague, Andrew Bradley, who's a field producer extraordinaire, super producer. And you and I tease Andrew all the time. So the way this works, there's not nearly as many, certainly golf writers or even sports writers, as there used to be. And so a lot of times, Andrew Bradley is the only point of entry for a player coming through the flash area, which is where they do the interviews after the rounds. He's the only one there asking questions. If not, it's a tour media official. And sometimes Andrew can watch the telecast and comes up with good questions. A lot of times he can't. He clearly had saw what happened with Scotty on the 18th hole. I'm bummed we can't run this sound because it's pretty funny sound. And I just felt so bad. Like I had so much, not even empathy, real sympathy, because I've been there. I've done this before where the question completely was a very clunky question. And had Andrew had a little bit more time, I'm sure he would have come up with a better way of doing it. But I felt so sorry for him just because of the way Scotty's usually pretty good. He suffers fools pretty well, but he had no interest in that question.
And of course, it gets aggregated everywhere. The tour sends it out on its own official account. It was like an 8-second clip, and it said reporter colon, which is Andrew Bradley, our field producer extraordinaire, on 18 there, just kind of a little lapse maybe on that last putt, and Scotty is literally just coming off the golf course. He had to been 3 or 4 minutes removed,
yeah,
having that pretty shocking miss, which again ended a streak of I believe it was 29 consecutive under par rounds, which is a record on the PGA Tour. And Scotty just looks at him and says, "No, I do that all the time. You watch me a lot, so that happens a lot to me." I wish we had Brad's here to defend himself. I don't know if he soiled himself in the flash area. You and I have both been in that position where it can be very awkward, and the athlete just kind of stares at you.
Tough scene,
but it happens, and I'm glad that he took that bullet instead of us.
Yeah, better than us. But yeah, I felt for you, Andrew. Like much love. Appreciate you taking that bullet. Just taking strays in the foxhole.
I'm sure Brad will join us at some point on the podcast this year. I'll be marking that down as something that we can talk to him about. Rex, you mentioned Alejandro Tosti. If you guys are unfamiliar with him, the 27-year-old Argentine, very good player, winning pedigree. He was one of the more, I think, interesting players to come off the KFT from 2023 into 2024. It has not been a very good season for Alejandro Tosti. In fact, his best finish prior to the Houston Open was a T43, so he badly needed a week like he had in Houston. And it was just about everything in Houston. You can see, obviously, the raw power for a player who's 5'6". He led the field in driving distance, garnering a lot of comps to Jose Altuve, the second base extraordinaire for the Houston Astros. He's a very fun player, and he's also a very fiery player, Rex. And I can't help but think, especially with the defections to LIV over the past couple years, where they've really taken up a lot of the PGA Tour's jerks. Alejandro Tosti is exactly the sort of foil or public enemy or kind of player nuisance that the PGA Tour desperately needs. I thought it was a great week for him, and my arrow's back pointing up.
You're going to make him a villain already. I was going to go the other way. I don't see him as a.
He has already been villainized.
Why? Just because of how
he was in the KFT. I mean,
how boisterous he is. Is that the idea?
I mean, he got suspended last year on the KFT for conduct detrimental. I always find it interesting because whether you think of players who've been on the PGA Tour over the past couple of years who have kind of a shoddy reputation, whether it's Sergio Garcia, whether it's Bryson DeChambeau, whether it's Patrick Reed, whether it's Tyrrell Hatton, it's very interesting that some players' poor behavior is always kind of excused away as cute or comical or a little bit silly. Like, remember when Tyrrell Hatton was like taking a shotgun and doing like the fake shotgun blast, and he was flipping the bird to certain putts, like, and everyone has a great laugh on social media, and sometimes it's just kind of laughed off as childish or immature. Toasties is just plain explosive, like the tantrums that he throws at himself, tantrums he throws when pace of play is not going well. He got into a little bit of a tiff with Tony Finau on Saturday. One of the most well-liked, well-respected players.
And that was hard for me to wrap my mind around. Yeah, because
on the PGA Tour, like, he has made no bones about it. He's not there to make friends. And that his college coach, J.C. Deacon, made a great point that it seems like he's at war on the golf course. But to me, if you're a fan, that's exactly what you want to see. Yeah. Maybe not going so far as to being disrespectful or showing poor etiquette, but but it's just sort of the fire and the passion on a tour that's largely full of vanilla players. Like, I loved it. I love everything about it.
I mean, we've sat here and talked about this the last couple of weeks about, and again, I find Scottie Scheffler enjoyable to watch just because I like his brand of golf. However, he's not very demonstrative. I mean, you have to look pretty hard, as Brandel did, to try to find some level of emotion one way or the other. Either he's happy or he's angry, but you really have to dissect and get in there deep to try to find exactly what he's feeling. You don't have to do that with Toasty. I mean, it was there written on his face on every single hole. And I realize, like, to be completely fair, he is from Argentina. I'm guessing English is a second language for him. However, I love some of the comments. And one of them was, quote, "Live it in my blood," was what he said this afternoon. And he was kind of being asked about, did you enjoy this Sunday? And his line was, "I live it in my blood." Now, I don't know exactly what he means by that, but I love the idea that, yeah, like that's
great,
a
great quote. I have no idea what that means.
No idea.
That's still a phenomenal quote.
And can't wait, quote unquote, to get revenge on finishing, not being able to win this
revenge
week.
On who? Steven Yeager? Does Steven Yeager need to watch his kneecaps or something?
I don't even think it's Steven Yeager. I think it's I think the golf gods need to be looking over their shoulder, to be honest with you. Yes, Tito's getting a little angry right now because I'm talking about someone else other than him. I think this has everything to do with him being angry at the golf gods. They need to be looking over their shoulder. And I don't even know, maybe. I mean, we'll have to wait to see where this plays out, because I watched and enjoyed all of it. Not just today, but, you know, watching him throughout the course of the week, and almost to the point that I kind of had to go back and take a bit of a deep dive on trying to figure out, like, what was his path to the PGA Tour. And it was very much unorthodox, and he did win once on the KFT Tour. I'm not quite sure if that's highly decorated, as I think is what you called it.
I mean, he was a phenomenal college player at the University of Florida. Like, he's very highly thought of. I mean, he's 27 years old. He finished third in points last year on the KFT, while also sitting out about a month while being suspended. It was very likely he was going to be the number one player coming off the KFT before that suspension.
But isn't this the exact same personality that we want? I mean, I'd hate to circle back around and pick on Cam Young, because he seems to be a common target of ours. But when you watch him play golf, there doesn't seem to be a lot of joy there in my mind. Maybe he's enjoying it deep down inside. But when you're watching him play golf, he looks wildly unhappy. You can't say that about Alejandro. Now, maybe there are times when he's unhappy about pace of play or a playing partner or whatever the case may be. But when he's in full stride and he's living it in his blood, whatever that means, you can clearly tell that he's having a good time. I think that's good for the game. That those are the personalities, I think, that Jason Gore was talking about when he said the PGA Tour can make a star in 3 weeks. And I think maybe it was a little misconstrued. It has more to do with, it's not about the PGA Tour making a star. It's about the PGA Tour creating opportunity for someone like Alejandro, for the world to get to know him a little bit better.
I mean, you could look at examples this year. Nick Dunlap went from a player that no one had ever heard of. If you're a general PGA Tour fan, like, unless you're following college and amateur golf, you'd never heard of Nick Dunlap before the American Express. Unless you follow the Korn Ferry Tour, you'd never heard of Jake Knapp before he got
another
to Mexico,
very entertaining personality.
And then did it again at the Cognizant Classic with another high finish there. To me, Alejandro Toasty is kind of cut from that mold as well. And I think, Rex, when you think about the PGA Tour landscape currently, LIV has taken a lot of things. They've taken, you know, top end players like John Rahm and Cam Smith. They've taken, I think, a lot of the depth of the PGA Tour, maybe even the future PGA Tour, whether it's Joaquin Niemann or like an Adrian Meronk. But I think what they've taken mostly is the guys who are polarizing, who one way or another you felt something about them, whether it was Patrick Reed, whether it was Sergio Garcia, whether it was Brooks Koepka, whether it was Bryson DeChambeau. Those players were popular because they were successful, but they were also popular in the sense that people wanted to follow them because you may have like hate followed them, right? Like, it's we have that on social media as well. But those players, like, you kind of just love to hate them.
But don't you need both though?
They make you feel something.
Yeah.
It could be good. It could be bad. To me, Alejandro Toasty is kind of that player. Like, he has a wonderful backstory. Like, if you get to know him, he's actually a really sweet kid. I've had nothing but positive interactions with him. I used to cover him in college, and I've kept up with his pro career ever since he was on the KFT. Like, it is rags to riches to now see him living out his dream on the PGA Tour. But there are also dozens of players who have had nothing but terrible interactions with him, and hate his guts at the pro level. And I think that makes for interesting viewing. Like when Toasty gets in contention, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that the PGA Tour desperately needs those. He's not a needle mover in the sense, like traditionally, whether it's a Tiger or a Phil or a John Rahm or a Spieth. But I think if his name's on the leaderboard, you at least want to see what happens. I think that's a really promising start for a PGA Tour rookie.
I don't think we're there yet. A colleague of ours, and I don't even know if Doug Ferguson said this, but he's the one that relayed this line to me. And I think it was really good. We were talking about it at the Players Championship, that the PGA Tour is a Marvel movie without any villains right now, to your point. And I think that's a really good way of putting it, because all you have is a bunch of leading men right now in the PGA Tour, and no one that you can sort of get behind and not like. And if you look at any other sport, and I'm not even passing judgment, some people like Aaron Rodgers, some people don't. My guess is if your team is not the New York Jets, you probably don't like them. And you can go down the line and do that probably in every sport, where golf is different. Like the villains in golf have to be sort of bred to be that. They have to be cultivated. You have to have the Patrick Reeds of the world continually make mistakes, continually step out of line for people to notice, and then to finally realize, oh, like we don't like him. Like we're not going to like him. There aren't too many of those guys on tour right now. I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure you can count them on one hand. Like I'm talking bold face names. I'm talking bold face names on the PGA.
I think whatever's going on between Patrick Cantlay
and some sort of negative response.
I think whatever's going on between Patrick Cantlay and Rory McIlroy probably qualifies, and I'm not quite sure whatever that is. Like this goes back well beyond whatever happened at the Ryder Cup last year. I think it has more to do with what happened behind closed doors at a policy board meeting, to be quite honest with you. But that kind of qualifies. It's a bit polarizing. You have people on both sides of the issue. Whereas that's not Patrick Reed. That's not Bryson DeChambeau. That's not Sergio Garcia. I mean, those players had clearly created sort of this persona that it was easy for fans not to like. I don't know how many times my mother-in-law will text me on a Sunday afternoon and do we like him? And most of the times it used to be probably 70% yes, 30% no. Now it's pretty much 90% yes, and very rarely is it a no.
I mean,
you don't have the villains.
I mean, Scotty, Wyndham Clark, Xander, Victor Hovland, Brian
Cam
Harman,
Young. Again, Max not to pick Holma. On him. He just looks unhappy, but I'm sure he's not an unhappy person.
I mean, Spieth, these are all very likable personalities. Like, I think Rory has become a polarizing figure ever since he kind of stepped to the forefront of the PGA Tour Live Civil War. Obviously, Patrick Cantlay, we saw what happened at the Ryder Cup. He is a polarizing personality for fans as well. Justin Thomas, I think, has kind of haters and skeptics in equal measure. And that's it. I mean, the tour has a lot of very likable, nice guys. And I think that's probably a problem. Is it not? Like, you need...
I don't know.
Players, you need players that fans don't like or are rooting against. I really firmly believe that. Golf is better with a villain.
Well, this goes back to the idea that golf, at least for the majority of my career, was at its best when Phil was playing his best. And I say that because Tiger Woods always played well over the course of the last 2+ decades. It was when Phil was playing well and they were actually pushing each other, and you had this very, very hard line in the sand. Either you're a Phil guy or a Tiger guy. I discovered that the very few that like both of those players, one of the two was polarizing. I'm not quite sure which one was the villain, which one was the hero during those days. However, that was always best for golf. I always found that to be the most engaging time in the game, because you had these people coming together who really didn't like the other side. And it felt more like a normal mainstream sport than I'd ever seen it before. This is a really good transition, because you probably did not want to go here. But speaking of villains, this one's really easy to go to. You heard Chris DeMarco's comments last week on the Subpar podcast about the Champions Tour, about Liv Goff, about the PIF, about him being angry that the PGA Tour Champions players are not being paid enough. I walked away from that angry, first off, that I didn't get it in my Friday column because I wasn't paying attention enough, apparently. And I had to get my Friday column.
You were supposed to be blogging on Thursday. How'd you miss it?
I totally missed it on Thursday. It hadn't been sort of aggregated up at that point. I totally missed it. I need to start. Actually, I went and listened to the podcast. It's very good, very good. It's Colton Ost and the Sleazy Man. What I believe that's his name. But I wanted to get the entire.
I don't think that's his real name, but go on.
But I think that's what he's called in the podcast. because I wanted to get the entire context to make sure I wasn't missing something, because it was baffling to me the idea that Chris DeMarco could be so tone deaf and completely unaware of the narrative in golf that fans are completely turned off by the talk about money and negotiations and equity shares, everything else we've been digging in on. And suddenly he thinks it's a good idea to do this. To me, that was baffling.
Okay, that was not a very good description of what Chris DeMarco actually said. If you guys missed it on the Subpar podcast, again, with Colt Nose and Sleazy Man, Chris DeMarco, who earned nearly $23 million in career earnings on the PGA Tour, said that he hopes that LIV Golf buys the PGA Tour champions and ramps them to prize funds because he called the PGA Tour champions purses, which for all the non-majors are essentially $3 million or less. He called it, quote, kind of a joke, and related it to the Players Championship when he said that seven players earned at least $2 million. Of course, that was a gross exaggeration, but the tone deafness that Chris DeMarco showed here. And look, there was no one supporting Chris DeMarco. There was no one like, yes, increase the purses for the PGA Tour champions. These guys deserve it. Golden parachute. Yeah, we have to provide that for them. Like no one's clamoring for that. In fact, if anything, it is the opposite, where these guys have had 20, 30 years to make a living. And for some reason, they're still handing out $3 million purses for the senior tour when, I mean, the ratings are what they are. No one's really paying attention. Steve Stricker's played well. Patrick Harrington continues to play well. That's great. But I don't think anyone is clamoring for more PGA Tour champions coverage or support. And yet for him to say they want to play for some real money out there, it was rightfully laughed off.
And I don't, Drew Stoltz is his name, but he does go by Sleazeman, by the way, just to make sure I wanted to get that right, clean that up. I've met Drew a few times. Very, very nice fella. I do like their podcast. I was just taken by the idea that what kind of rock, and I actually liked Chris DeMarco in his career. You want to talk about villains and heroes, like
former Morning Drive contributor.
Yeah. I mean, during that time when he was going head to head with Tiger Woods, and it was a pretty small window, but he created sort of this yin to Tiger Yang that I enjoyed writing about, that I enjoyed covering at Liverpool that year, at the Masters that year. I mean, he was an interesting foil to Tiger Woods, so to speak. But to come out with the idea that, oh, this is ridiculous, we should be making more money. Why? How? Like, please explain that to me. Like, why in the world do you think? And this goes to, I think, what is the undertone in fandom right now when it comes to the PGA Tour and professional golf in general is, I think a lot of PGA Tour players and even LIV Golf players have an overinflated sense of their own value. And maybe that's because of where we are in the game, and you've had this sort of irrational threat come in with all of this
money.
Why did
that start?
And they've upset that.
Why is there now the sense of entitlement? Why is there now the sense of entitlement? It goes back to Phil Mickelson. Phil is going to go down in this PGA Tour in LIV Golf Civil War as sort of the spark plug, the one who sort of initiated this entire movement, who has reshaped. I think in 25 years, Phil Mickelson will be remembered as the player who helped reshape this. But to me, he's also kind of brought this influx of entitlement across the board, where players think just because you've won a major championship or you won two or three times on the PGA Tour, that all of a sudden you should be paid like a top-end NFL quarterback, when the reality of the situation is this is still very much a niche sport. These are still athletes who, if they walked in downtown Ponte Vedra, they would most likely not be recognized without their PGA Tour player uniform on. And yet they've been filled with this belief that they're somehow being marginalized by the corporate overlords, and they're being severely underpaid and not valued to what their actual worth is, when I don't think the marketplace has ever or will ever actually support that.
No, I see where you're going with the Phil Mickelson angle, and I kind of like it as an origin story. I would say that we never end up where we are right now, which is the extreme example of what you're talking about, without the public investment fund. Like, he could sit and say that the players were underpaid and he wanted to look at the books and everything that he's been saying for the better part of a decade, if not more, if the public investment fund doesn't come along and decide.
But was Phil not the perfect facilitator for that?
Oh, absolutely. No, I get what you're saying. He was their white knight on that horse that they needed at that point in time. However, I don't know that we ever end up at this point in time. You probably would have ended up with, and I think we both had seen it over the last decade, let's say. I mean, the top players had started to become, even before LIV Golf, even before the Public Investment Fund got involved, you'd seen the top players become more and more disgruntled, just with the idea of how the pie was being split up. And this goes to, I mean, I think you can see this across the broader range of sports. I'll put it in a context that you can easily understand. Your conference, the SEC, is probably going to try to ruin college football along with the Big Ten. What you got there? Oh, nice. Augusta. The Augustus.
Home of the Augustus.
But I think that's a perfect example of where golf found itself, where you have the SEC and the Big Ten, clearly the top two conferences in college football, and they want a bigger piece of the pie. I think the translation to that is Phil Mickelson and everyone else in that universe at that time felt like they deserved a bigger piece of the pie. And maybe they did. Like I was always on the side of the player throughout this process, simply because we know how much a lot of these contracts are for. I'm talking about the television contracts. So it's easy to put a number on it. And golf is the only professional sport, only mainstream professional sport, I guess I need to put it that way, that doesn't have a collective bargaining agreement. So in the NBA, 49% of all basketball-related income has to go back to salaries. I think in the NFL, it's 51%. So that's pretty easy math to figure out. You don't have that in golf. And I think that was sort of the starting point for Phil. So to your point, yeah, he was the guy that came in. And you're right. If you're writing this story 15 years from now, he'd be the turning point. That's the seminal moment when he decided, okay, things were going to change. They don't change, though, without the Public Investment Fund.
Think they should kill off the Champions Tour?
Think they should care about the Champions Tour? You're talking about fans?
Kill off.
Kill off.
Get rid of. Cancel. Eliminate.
I don't know if that's the option, because I think it's a product that works in certain communities. So, no, I'm not going to go that far. I think it's going to be a question of resources at some point or the other, because wherever it is the PGA Tour ends up, and I've been teased that that's going to become a drinking game because I keep saying using that phrase. I don't know another way to put it. Wherever it is they end up, drink up, it's going to have to be more about the top players. It's going to have to be more about the big events. It's going to have to be more about the PGA Tour. And the secondary option is going to be whatever is below that. And you can call it the PGA Tour B, you can call it a glorified Corn Ferry Tour, whatever the case may be, but that's going to have to be the secondary focus. Okay. We need to, if we're going to create what Rory has talked about, and we want to do it like they do with European football, and you're going to have to do the pyramid, that means you're going to have to create opportunities for players to play their way in to these big events, which we've seen so far this season. And it could work in theory. As resources start getting thin, the Champions Tour, the PGA Tour Champions is the easy option.
SSG. Yeah. There's a couple ways to make money, and one of them is to cut costs. If Tiger Woods, who is eligible for the Champions Tour at the beginning of 2026, yeah, if my math is correct, I believe he's 48 years old now. If he can't save the Senior Tour, no one can. To me, that's something to watch out for in the next couple of years. Rex, before we get out of here, we do have to give a shout out to Stephen Yeager, who did win the golf tournament. 6-time winner on the Corn Ferry Tour. That's the second most all time before the aforementioned Jason Gore. That's like not an accomplishment that you'd want. That shows that you're like really good. Like we're talking top 150, 200 players in the world, and yet you were not good enough. Good on Stephen Yeager for the persistence and winning in his 135th event of his PGA Tour career. And Nelly Korda, or as our buddy Schleybaugh calls her, Kelly Norda, wins for the third consecutive event on the LPGA. First player to do that since Yanni Sen, 3 wins before April 1st. If you are a women's golf fan, this is exactly what you want to see. America's most high-profile player, who is still very much in the prime of her career, mid-20s, absolutely dominating the competition. I think it just makes the major season, which of course begins the week after the Masters, the Chevron Championship, that much more exciting. You've got an early flight for the Valero Texas Open. We'll be doing the full preview pod on Wednesday. But before we go, what's one thing you're looking forward to this week?
I'm going to San Antonio. So barbecue, no? Please hit us up. Let me know. If anyone has any suggestions, please let me know. You usually do my itinerary, but you clearly have nothing for me.
I've been to the Valero Texas Open a couple times. TPC San Antonio might be one of my least favorite golf courses of the entire PGA Tour road.
Why is that?
I think it's entirely bland. I think it's hard for the sake of being hard, and I don't like it as a tune-up event for the Masters. That said, apparently I'm out of line there. If you look at the field this week, pretty good. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ludvig Åberg, Tom Kim, just to name a few. Corey Connors, of course, is the defending champion. I'm not sure if the players didn't want kind of 3 weeks off from the Players' Championship to the Masters. They didn't want that kind of break. They're just trying to get competitive reps. Maybe they don't want to have the situation where, you know, you're sitting at home thinking about the Masters and you kind of heighten it more than maybe you would. Or maybe they think TPC San Antonio, unlike me, is a good tune-up for Augusta. If I were a PGA Tour player, I would have watched what transpired over these past couple of days at Memorial Park and said, probably should have teed it up there.
Yeah,
that was a really good test of golf. Hand up, I did not pay attention to this tournament all that much when it was in the fall. And I thought this was a phenomenal tune-up. I'd love to see it the week ahead of the Masters moving forward. Wide fairways, very slick greens, pretty severe runoffs around some of the greens, very long, particularly some of the par fours. I thought it was a really, really good test. Very short rough, obviously, which played completely differently than it did in the fall. Big fan.
Big fan, and I had covered it once, I believe, in the fall, and it's an entirely different golf course when it's not a reseeded, and you essentially just have the dormant Bermuda rough, which it was what it was at the time. This played almost like, you're right, I think the week before Augusta would have been perfect. I think the concern there is they didn't really get the Texas wins, and I'm sure someone's going to call me out for this. Maybe they don't get wins this time of year in Texas. I don't know. Maybe they do. But I can imagine a scenario where players probably wouldn't be really happy if it blew 20, 30 miles an hour all week.
I mean,
I'm trying to get ready for the Masters, but I could be wrong on that one.
I mean, the Houston Open, when it was there for years, the golf club of Houston, like, I don't ever remember like howling winds in that golf course. It's always going to blow 10 to 20, I think, quite generally. But the golf club of Houston always went above and beyond, kind of fine-tuning its golf course to be tailor-made for what Augusta National is. You know, mowing from green to tee, short rough, greens as fast as possible without killing them off. Like, I thought that was a really good preview. You're going to see much higher winds in San Antonio this week for the Valero Texas Open, if that's any indication. All eyes, obviously, are going to be on Rory this week. Has not played well over the past couple of months. And kind of a hit-or-miss record at this golf tournament as well. I believe he finished tied for second in his first appearance. I covered that one in 2013, if memory serves, and then missed the cut last year, which portended a missed cut at the Masters tournament the following week. Rex, I smell like hickory smoke. I was by the pit all afternoon watching the Houston Open as I smoked an Easter ham as well as an Easter lamb.
Wow.
What did you have on the grill this weekend? How did you celebrate Easter?
We celebrated Easter over at my in-law's house. So we just had an Easter egg hunt, and they did ham and all of the things, so I didn't do it. Yesterday was my big smoking day. I did ribs, and I did what was left of the pork butt, the half a pork butt that I'd done before. So I was out there all day long, basketball, golf. It was perfect.
Did you participate in the Easter egg hunt? And if so, how many eggs did you get?
Well, we only get one. So my wife and I, we get one egg.
One egg?
Well, yeah. So everyone has a colored egg. So we have a pretty big family. So I think with all of us combined, there's six kids and then four adults and then my in-laws. So everyone has their own colored eggs.
This would not be the game that I should be playing.
No. So it got to be a little bit too competitive between my wife and her sister-in-law. My sister-in-law was an athlete. She played soccer at Auburn. Like, so she can actually move around the yard. Bunkmate, not so much. So it got to be a little contentious. So we had to split it up and everyone gets their own color. And I just have one big blue egg.
Given your torn meniscus, I'm sure you were not cutting, juking,
just limped around,
spinning out in the open field looking for your blue egg. I hope your recovery is coming along nicely. I, as one does in Ponte Vedra, had an Easter brunch at TPC Sawgrass. Golf course is still looking immaculate. How spoiled are my kids, Rex, that they do their Easter egg hunt at no other than the home of the Players' Championship? They always put on a nice event and it's always a thrill to go back there. I'm definitely Easter egg hunted out.
Well, because you had one at your preschool too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Sure did.
But that paid off.
Kudos to Cam. He found the golden egg, which had a $275 voucher for a free week of daycare tuition. Thank you, Cam. We came home, pulled up Amazon, and said, son, whatever you want to buy, whatever it is, it's yours. You're saving daddy a whole lot of money this week. So thanks to Cam. Hope you guys had a happy Easter at home. We'll be back in a couple of days' time for the preview edition of the Valero Texas Open, as well as getting in all of our Masters forecasts that are sure to go wrong. In the meantime, you guys know the drill.
Maybe.
NBCSports.com/golf, our latest news, notes, and commentary. I'll be on Golf Today with Joel Beal of Golf Digest on Monday, and Rex will be giving live reports, I believe, starting on Tuesday, TPC San Antonio.
Correct.
Going all the way through Friday before he will join me on Saturday from our rental house in Augusta. But as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.